comes, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it is my pleasure to welcome our many listeners, not only in this country, but throughout the world, but also to welcome to the show four experienced, talented, and clever players of this game. We're delighted to welcome back that master of improvised comedy and repartee who's shone in the show so often, that is Paul Merton. He's sitting on my right with the man who's been on the show longer than anybody else on the panel, shows his wit and literacy nearly every time he speaks, and that is Clement Freud. And on my left, we have one of the icons of the entertainment profession. She's been with us so long that she's, starred in so many comedy shows we can't remember them all, and that is Wendy Richard. She's just escaped from her soap, and beside her sits one of the new stars on the comedy firmament, the lovely Lisa Tarbuck. Would you please welcome all four of them? Beside me sits Janet Staplehurst, who's going to help me keep the score. She'll blow the whistle when the 60 seconds are up. And as usual, I'm going to ask our four players of the game to speak on the subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And this particular show is coming from the Drill Hall. And we're just off the West End of London, and we have a fantastic cosmopolitan audience. Born from every part of this great metropolis. But anyway, they are ready to cheer us on our way as we begin the show this week with Paul Merton. Paul, the subject I have in front of me is why I never use Cockney rhyming slang. You have 60 seconds as usual. Tell us something about that in this game starting now.
It was, of course, invented by the Duke of Clarence, the well-known pub in the East End. The reason why I don't use Cockney rhyming slang is because I don't particularly understand it. I don't know anybody that does. If I was to say to a friend of mine, "How's your plates?" they would react in a strange, incomprehensible way because they would not know that I was referring to the state of their feet. This, I think, is the problem with the Cockney rhyming slang. Quite often the slang... I nearly hesitated, but I didn't.
Clement Freud challenge.
Deviated from Cockney rhyming slang.
Where?
He hesitated.
I think it was repetition of ha.
Yeah. Now, your first challenge was a deviation, which I couldn't allow. So I'm afraid if you'd gone for the hesitation, it would have been different. At least it's too late,
darling. Hesitation.
Yes.
It's too late.
It's too late. Now, the first challenge I have to accept, and he wasn't deviating, so, Paul, you still have the subject. You get a point for us for an incorrect challenge, and you carry on with why I never use Cockney rhyming slang, starting now.
Up the apples, of course, refers...
Clement, challenge.
Repetition of course.
Yes. This is right. Quite early on, why you said it, of course,
I never use it.
Yes, right at the beginning, you said, of course, I never use it very much because.
Yes.
And Clements has got in there. And Clement Freud has got in with a correct challenge, so he gets a point for that, and he takes over the subject. There are 29 seconds available. Why I never use Cockney rhyming slang, starting now.
The reason I never use Cockney rhyming slang is predominantly because I'm not a Cockney. Similarly, I do not wear Chinese clothing in view of the fact that I do not come from the Orient. Nevertheless, when in Beijing some years ago, I inquired...
Wendy Richard challenge.
I think Clem's starting to deviate.
I think he has. I think he has deviated. He's gone away from Cockney rhyming slang into the Orient and talking about the clothes he wears and everything. So
he could have been talking about Lake Norient. We don't know, do we?
Right, I still think he was deviated. So, Wendy, a correct challenge, a point to you, and there are 11 seconds. You tell us something about why I never use Cockney rhyming slang, starting now.
I never use Cockney rhyming slang, even though the programme I'm currently appearing in is supposed to be about these East End people. In fact, no one ever uses Cockney rhyming slang.
In this game, whoever is speaking when the whistle goes gains an extra point. On this occasion, it was Wendy Richard, and therefore she's in the lead at the end of the round. Lisa, I'd like you to take the next round. And we have in front of us red tape. So can you tell us something about red tape in this game, starting now?
Red tape is obstructive official procedure that is formal or sticks rigidly to certain rules that might be deemed non-commonsensical. For example, if I were to dig up the road outside the drill hall today, I would ask the gas, the electricity, the TV, the broadband, all of them to get together and put everything in the same hole. Now, red tape would bind me into waiting.
Wendy challenged.
I think you might be struggling a wee bit, and anyway, they use red and white tape.
Thank you.
I think you were getting rather devious there. I really wasn't following your train of thought at all.
Red tape, stopping digging holes. Come on.
They were digging the holes, and they were putting all that stuff into the holes.
Who were?
She's only pretend, Nicholas. There wasn't a hole there at all.
So what is your... Listen, I'm supporting you, Wendy. What was your challenge?
I've forgotten now. Right. Anyway, it's when they have holes and things like that, it's usually red and white tape, not red tape.
It's often yellow, actually, yes.
No, it's yellow for a different sort of utility.
Crime
that's
scene.
Being dug
up. Are you enjoying it?
It's going to be yellow tape in a minute.
I kept this conversation going because of all the people who listen around the world who would like to know what happens when we dig holes in the road in our country. Right, Wendy has given in the ghost, and Lisa, you are still with it. You have a point for an incorrect challenge. You keep the subject.
Thank you.
32 seconds, red tape, starting now.
It was a term coined in the 18th century because government ministers and lawyers used to bind their papers up with red tape or ribbon. Apparently Charles Dickens brought the phrase into common parlance.
Paul Challenge.
There was an er in there.
There was a hesitation, yes. Paul,
that's
you've
a shame,
got
shame, I know. But I wouldn't feel right about myself if I hadn't challenged. The
so
game.
You've got red tape, and you have 19 seconds, starting now.
I like nothing better than getting a box of red tape and dressing it all around my living room. It adds gaiety to any occasion. Invite your neighbours round for a drink, and they say, "Where is the alcohol? I haven't got any, but look at this red tape. It's beautiful, draped by the windows."
Wendy Challenge.
Have we had more than one drape?
No.
No, it was tape before, not draped on.
Sorry, beg your pardon. Sorry,
right.
Paul.
We like keeners. Well done. There are only 3 seconds to go, but it was a wrong challenge. So, Paul, you have another point. 3 seconds. Red tape starting now.
The best thing about red tape, and I want you to know this, is that it's absolutely...
So Paul Merton speaking as the whistle went, gone that extra point on the occasion. With others in the round, he's taking the lead now. He's ahead of Wendy Richard, and Clement Freud and Lisa Tarbuck follow. And Wendy, we'd like you to take the next round. The subject is pulling power. I'm sure you've got a lot of that, and you've displayed it on many occasions, but tell us about it now in this game, starting now.
The best form of pulling power is to have power. Once one is in such a position, you can pull anything or anyone you desire. I've got
to Lisa Challenge.
That was a dry mouth, wasn't
that's
it?
Right.
The
yes.
Hesitation. Yeah.
And we'd like to hear from you on pulling power, Lisa. And there are 49 seconds available, starting now.
Pulling power can best be used when in a pub and standing behind a pump and gradually easing maybe the Guinness back, pouring it with the glass slightly tilted and easing it in. Now, it takes...
Wendy Challenge.
Two easings.
It was too much easing, my love.
Oh, easing. Yes. There'll be a lot of that.
So, Wendy, you've got pulling power back and you have 36 seconds to tell us something about it, starting now.
Listen, you're always doing that to me on this programme. You are at least allowed to draw breath before you start.
No, Wendy, actually, in this game, I always give a pause before the now so they can draw the breath before that, and I say, and you start now. So we go straight off. Otherwise, they will be in like knives. And I'm afraid it was a long pause.
You paused for a whole second.
Well, I have to take a big breath.
So, Clement, I have to agree with you, and you have... The correct challenge, 35 seconds on pulling power, starting now.
I always remember Wendy Richard in the Strongest Man series, in which she pulled a double-decker number 159 bus up Primrose Hill, holding these...
Paul Challenge.
159 doesn't go up Primrose Hill. Doesn't go up there. goes to Brixton.
I know, right.
Well, well, and on to Streatham, in fact.
That's where she was pulling it.
That's where she... Paul, it doesn't matter for what Clement was saying, because he could have been pulling the bus anywhere, any number. But we did enjoy your interruption, so we give Paul a bonus point for that. And Clement... Clement gets a point for being interrupted and keeps the subject with 22 seconds available. Pulling power starting now.
Pulling power appears to be a woman, usually or occasionally man's, ability to seduce either physically or even...
Yes, sir.
There was a hesitation there.
I'm afraid so.
I was only drawing a breath.
I think you drew the breath because you wondered where you were taking the listeners in Radio 4 at that moment. And maybe discretion was a better path of valour, and you paused. Paul, you have a correct challenge in 11 seconds. Tell us something about pulling power, starting now.
Well, it's all to do with perceived status, I suppose. If somebody looks at you and thinks, oh, he's quite attractive because A, he has money, or B, he has influence, C...
Wendy and Lisa, your lights came on together.
Oh.
So I don't know what we do on that occasion.
You can have it.
Lisa, that's she's given nice it to you. So what is your challenge?
Repetition of he has, actually.
Yes, he did say he has twice. That's right. So, Lisa, you've cleverly got in with 2 seconds to go on pulling power starting now.
My friend Sarah...
Lisa Tarbuck was then speaking as the whistle went, so gained that extra point and others in the round. She's now in second place behind Paul Merton, and Wendy Richard and Clement Freud are equal in third place, only 1 point behind. Clement, it's your turn to begin. The subject now is Eskimos. Tell us something about Eskimos in this game, starting now.
If you're into blubber, igloos, or rubbing noses with people of whom you're fond, I would recommend that you become an Eskimo as soon as you possibly can. Eskimos tend to live in the north of Canada, in Labrador, Greenland, and they are squat, not hugely attractive, with only limited pulling power, but they waddle about and they really enjoy snow, for which commodity they have 27 different words. This is an interesting fact I read in Reader's Digest some months ago when I went to my dentist. Eskimos in French are spelt not with a K as the third letter, but with a Q-U. An odd.
You haven't won friends with us. Yeah.
Is there a gas leak here?
But you set it off, if there is.
No. Well, it was a hesitation.
It was a hesitation.
I know.
And he kept going for 52 seconds as well.
Oh.
There's no justice in this game. He goes for 52 seconds, gets nothing. Paul gets in with 8 seconds to go. And we're going to get letters from Greenland about that, I'm sure, about the description of those Eskimos. Paul, it was a correct challenge, so I have to give it to you within the rules of just a minute and say you have 8 seconds on Eskimos starting now.
There was a film made in 1922 called Nanook of the North, and it was quite famous at the time for being the world's first documentary.
So Paul Merton got another point, speaking as a whistle went, and has increased his lead, and it's his turn to begin as well. The subject now is how to tell the time in the dark. That's an interesting subject. Give you a second or two to think about it, and have 60 seconds as usual, starting now.
Well, obviously, you look to see where the sun is in the sky. If it's not there, then you can presume it's night time. If you have a luminous watch, this will shine in the dark and indicate the time of passage that you are particularly enjoying at that moment. Or you can phone Tim. If he doesn't know the time, phone a speaking clock.
Clement Chance.
Repetition of phone.
Yes.
Yes, of course. Right.
Very good reactions from the audience all round here, I think.
Well, one is lovely. They're caught up in the content of the show.
Yes. And they get... Just as well, isn't it, really?
Yes.
Stops them throwing things.
Yes. Clement, you had a correct challenge. You have 44 seconds. Tell us something about how to tell the time in the dark, starting now.
How to tell the time in the dark is an essentially simple process. 5 to 8, you say. 9:15, 11 o'clock precisely. What is quite difficult if there's no light, is to achieve the accurate time.
Your round of applause there was for what you said, Clement, but you paused. You sort of took your laugh and retired. And Wendy, back challenge first.
Oh, sorry, I've forgotten what now. I think it was hesitation.
It was hesitation, yes. You just retired from it all. So, Wendy, you have 25 seconds. You tell us something about how to tell the time in the dark starting now.
It's quite easy to tell the time in the dark. One just has to get an illuminated clock, preferably one with the digits showing, so then you can just read and find out where you are, time-wise, that is. The other way I tell the time in the dark is if I hear my dog Shirley start to go downstairs, then I know that I have to get up to give her a breakfast because she's very regular.
So, Wendy Richard was then speaking as the whistle went, has moved forward. She's now in second place, but just only one ahead of Clement Foyle and Lisa Tarbuck. She trails Paul Merton, and Lisa, your turn to begin. The subject now is twins. Talk about twins on 60 seconds, if you can, starting now.
The famous twins are, of course, Gemini. I have a twin in the back part of my family. Obviously, I mean the word ancestrally. My grandfather was one of a twin. One made it, one of them didn't. My granddad Barney is the remaining.
Paul Challenge.
Did we not have granddad before?
We did have granddad before. Grandfather, was
yes.
it?
Yes.
Well, so it was granddad then and grandfather then. 46 seconds. Another point to you, by the way, Lisa, for incorrect challenge. Twins is still with you starting now.
It's said that when the eggs form inside the mum, if one twin makes it and the other one doesn't, it's absorbed by the...
Paul Challenge.
Sadly, it's repetition of one.
Yes.
Well, it is.
No, but that is the rules of the game.
It is.
Sorry. And if we didn't play by the rules, there would be no game. We haven't just come for the content, we've come for the fun and the challenges. And 39 seconds, Paul, a correct challenge to you. Tell us something about twins starting now.
It was a very popular film starring Arnold Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito, the concept being because they didn't look anything like each other, what fun and hilarity would ensue when you realise that these two disparate actors were in fact related to... What are you taking your coat off for? By the fact that they were twins. And indeed they were. And what an hilarious film it turned out to be.
Clement Challenge.
Repetition of film.
There was a
movie?
Film. Yes. No, not film. Movie. No, you did say film. Clement, 20 seconds on twins starting now.
I have grand twins called Max and Harry who are very similar, and if people say, are they identical, I have to explain that only one of them is. When you see them together, it is extraordinarily easy to say which one is which.
So when do you challenge?
Hesitation, and I think we were coming up for repetition as well.
Oh, Wendy, don't ladle it on, darling. You've got in with 4 seconds to go very cleverly. You've got twins. And you start now.
Molly Sugden's got identical twin sons. I can't remember their names.
So, Wendy Richard, with other points in the round, and also for one for speaking when the whistle went, has moved forward. She's now only 1 point behind our leader, Paul Merton. The other two are only a few points behind. And, Wendy, it's also your turn to begin. Market traders. I don't know why that's been chosen for you, but maybe there is some connection which the people abroad won't know about. We all do. Tell us.
Don't you worry, dear. It does go abroad. They'll know what I'm talking about.
Oh, dear. Is it shown in India? And
yes.
And and China?
Yes, they learn to speak English watching our program.
I was told they modelled their English on us in just a minute, actually.
Oh, really?
Isn't
it? Oh, right. Well, in that case, Nicholas, I shall try harder.
Right. Mockery will get you everywhere. Right. You have market traders. You have 60 seconds starting now.
This programme that I'm in, my family are market traders, i.e. it was my father's market trading place first, then my brother took it over, and now my son runs it.
Clement Challenge.
Three Mys.
There were Three Mys.
Were there?
Yes, I'm afraid there were, Wendy. Clement, you have 47 seconds. Tell us something about market traders starting now.
I'm very fond of Berwick Street Market in Soho, where my favourite trader has now gone because the weights and measures man has overpowered him with red tape. It's very sad because one used to get all kinds of cheeses, Gorgonzola, Gruyere, Cheddar, Cheshire, Wensleydale.
Wendy Challenge.
Look, he's listing again.
I know he is.
I heard it the other day. That's all he does is list.
He does a lot of other things. He's very witty and clever in the show.
I didn't say he wasn't. I'm just saying he lists.
I know he does.
If I can't pause for breath, he can't list.
Wendy, I'm sorry, You're the only clap in your effrontery. You can't come in the show and institute a new rule. Anybody can list if they want to. Actually, it's an extremely difficult thing to do. You try it sometime.
I will. Next time it's my turn, I'll have a list.
And anybody can list. There's nothing in the rules that say you can't do a list. And Clement does it very skillfully, and he still has a subject and a point, of course. Market traders, 27 seconds, starting now.
In search of dairy produce, this good man in London W1 asked what I would like to have, and he said, let me give you a list. He said, cream, milk.
Paul Challenge.
Repetition of he said. He said, and he said.
He said, he said. Yep. Right, Paul, you've got in there with 15 seconds. Tell us something about market traders starting now.
My favourite market trader is my local greengrocer. He sells apples, pears, bananas, pomegranates, grapes, red and white, plums, cherries, nuts even. Can you imagine? He sells apricots.
Listening will get you everywhere. Paul Merton was speaking as a whistle went again. He's increased his lead at the end of the round. And, Paul, your turn to begin. My bath time. that doesn't mean to say it's my bath time, Nicholas Parsons' bath time. You can take the subject any way you like and talk about my bath time starting now.
I like to have a rubber duck, which is, of course, Cockney rhyming slang. What I do is I pour the hot water into the tub, light a scented candle and lie back in the candlelight, infusing in the fumes. And what a beautiful...
Wendy is challenged.
Did we have candle twice?
Candle light.
I couldn't hear what he was saying. No, he did say candle and candlelight, so I think the audience is still laughing at me. Anyway, let's get on. Paul, an incorrect challenge, another point, 46 seconds available. My bath time starting now.
I think it's something that women generally are better at doing it than men because they tend to cover themselves in all kinds of beautiful, smelly substances which create a lovely air of fragrance and relaxes you because, after all, we are some 85% water inside our bodies. So what could be...
Clement Foy Challenge.
Speak for yourself.
Paul, it was an interruption. You have another point, 25 seconds. My bath time starting now.
Nicholas Parsons' bath time is, of course, another matter entirely. He likes to pay Oriental boys £50 a time to rub hot liquid into the back of his neck.
Clement, yes.
Repetition of rub. Unless that was rhyming slang.
I don't remember him saying rub before. No, he smothered themselves in these unguents he talked about, these nice smelly things. He didn't even say rub.
No, I didn't say rub.
No, you always look as if you're
just
trying to bluff
mind.
Me out of it, but no, I didn't say rub. 17 seconds, another point to you, Paul. My bath time starting now.
I can't carry on at the moment, as Clement keeps repeating rubber duck to me for some reason. But I shall try and carry on. Perhaps he's involved in one of those CB radios that we used to have in the 1970s when you were a truck driver, and you used to transmit to other particular purveyors of those big, heavy vehicles, and they'd say, hello.
So, Paul Merton speak against the whistle went. He's increased his lead as we move into the final round. He's three or four ahead of Lisa Tarbuck and one ahead of Wendy Richard and Clement Freud are equal in third place. And Lisa, your turn to begin. This subject, I'm sure it's been chosen especially for you, prejudice.
Yes, there's a certain television program which has that title. And so, Lisa, talk about it. 60 seconds, starting now.
Prejudice is opinion formed before one is in possession of all the actual facts. It's generally based on inadequate ideas, and in my opinion, all prejudice is fueled by assumption. The biggest prejudice is ageism, followed by sexism, racism, homophobia. An amazing prejudice is middle-class confidence, good looks, ugly looks, hairstyles.
And
oh,
that's
looks.
Paul challenge.
Repetition yeah. of looks,
too many
yeah.
looks. Yes, Paul, you've got 33 seconds. You tell us something about prejudice starting now.
Well, I think Lisa put it very well. It is that kind of approach where you think you know something about a subject, but you don't really pursue it in any great shape or form. And as she says, ageism is perhaps one of the biggest prejudices now. I mean, look at Nicholas Parsons. There he is. One of the few men alive who can remember the old Queen. And I'm not, of course, referring to the present incumbent on the throne, Elizabeth II. I mean the first.
Clement Freud challenge.
He repeated, she said, quite a long time ago.
In another round?
No. Really did. I didn't want to speak about it for a long time.
I think this is a Freud bluff, isn't it?
No, it really was.
All right, Clement, you have the subject. You have 6 seconds, starting now.
Pride and Prejudice is a book known to many people in this audience at the Drill Hall.
There was a gap where my buzzer was heard. I think we heard Clement buzz.
Came in before the whistle.
I think we heard Clement buzz whistle. Hesitation.
There was hesitation there, Paul. So you've got in with half a second to go. No, actually, 1 second to go on Prejudice starting now.
It's terrible.
So, as I said, that was to be the last round, so let me give you the final situation here. Very, very fair. Lisa Tarbuck, Wendy Richard, and Clement Freud all finish up equal in second place. Wasn't that fair? They all got the same number of points. They gave their usual good value, but about 7 or 8 points ahead of them was Paul Merton. So we say, Paul, you're the winner this week. It only remains for me to say thank you to these 4 intrepid and delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Wendy Richard, Lisa Tarbuck, and Clement Freud. Also thank Janet Staplehurst, who helped me keep the score. She's blown her whistle so delicately and delightfully. We thank our producer-director, who is Claire Jones. We are indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this game, and we are also very grateful to this lovely audience here in the Drill Hall near the West End of London, who have, I hope, enjoyed themselves, but they've certainly cheered us on our way magnificently. From me, Nicholas Parsons, from our audience, from our panel, tune in the next time we play Just a Minute.
And I've got just 10 seconds to say that you can join Nicholas Parsons at the same time next week with his panellists, a short list coming up, Graham Norton, Tony Hawkes, Pam Ayers, and Clement Freud.